Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Luckily that he believes that renewables need to be a part of the mix, that he would support renewable energy, and if he means what he says, we have the perfect project for him.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly! Do you hear me? Here's my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We have a busy show for you today. I hope you'll join in with us at 866-546-5254. First things first. Today, I do want to send out our thoughts and prayers to Stephanie Tubbs Jones and her family up in Cleveland. From what I understand, I don't know if this is the exact fact, but I heard she had an aneurysm while driving. Anyway, she's in the hospital in Cleveland, and one of my favorite people in political life, and she's very, very popular in Cleveland, and I hope certainly hope that she has a full recovery. That's what we're hoping, and we shall see how that turns out. But we turned out just fine here yesterday with Faye. Turned out Faye was kind of a pretender. Faye never, that I'm aware of, ever actually turned into a hurricane. We had winds here where the studio is around 70 miles an hour yesterday. And we had a considerable amount of rain. Oh, did we have rain. But all in all, compared to storms that we've had in the past here and all, it wasn't much. And as usual, the media got a hold of it and just beat it to death, you know. It gets so they just get completely out of it. I saw on the local news, and you know how local broadcasters are. One of them actually put on rubber boots and went out and stood at the edge of a pond here lately, and stood in the pond with the water up over the boots just a little bit, and 4 or 5 inches, so they could look like they were standing in some sort of hurricane conditions. And they go to the beach each time, you know. They go over and stand on Fort Myers Beach or Vanderbilt Beach or one of the many great beaches we have around here. And the wind is blowing, and you know they're out there in their weather gear and all. Like we don't know there's wind, like we don't know there's rain with a tropical storm or hurricane. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but local media. Wow, do they ever get carried away? But anyway, things are fine. We had power outage for a while and all that, and we did have quite a few people. It does surprise me that here we live in a place where, you know, it's fairly normal to get some pretty good storms. And yet the electric companies around here are just, I don't know, it seems like they've got the poles up with toothpicks or something. The electric goes off at the drop of a hat. I've never understood that around here, why they don't have better infrastructure on the electrical grid, but... I guess I don't want to criticize the electric company too much while we're doing the show here. They might just stop outside the studio and knock it off. Not that they haven't before. Anyway, lots to talk about today. How about that Phelps in the Olympics? I shouldn't talk about him too much. He's from my arch rival's school, the Meat Chicken Wolverines. He swam for them in college. But what a job. 8 gold medals. They say that the endorsement contracts will reach at least $100 million. Can you imagine being 22, 23 years old, whatever he is, and being right now set for life? Absolutely set for life. Will never have to worry another day in his life about money. I mean, that was guaranteed the moment he climbed out of the pool the last time. Wow. Absolutely wow. What else have we got on this? Going to the convention, and we're going to leave Fort Myers Regional Southwest Airport. Well, I shouldn't give the exact time. The Republican assassins might be waiting outside the gate there someplace. Anyway, leaving Sunday, going to arrive in Denver sometime Sunday evening. Going to be doing the show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at, I guess it'll be 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, just like always, unless something crazy happens. What else? Lots to do in Denver. There's going to be a lot to do, and I see they're going to have all kinds of protesters. The Pumas are going to be there. Now, look, folks, I was a Hillary Clinton guy all along, but I'm not joining any Pumas, and I'm not going to demonstrate at the convention, and I don't know. It's and then we've got this Recreate 68, and oh my God, I hope that doesn't happen. That group's going to be there, and there's going to be several other groups protesting and whatnot, and they've got jails all ready for them set up and everything. And you can tell it's a bunch of Democrats, all right. The Republicans, they all show up in marching lockstep and got their white shirt and ties and their suits and all that and behave absolutely perfectly. And then you got the Democrats, a bunch of misfits wearing flip-flops and tie-dyed T-shirts and jeans with holes with them with a bag of ganja in the back pocket. Although, I have read where the hookers do better when the Republicans are in town. I never could understand that. Who wouldn't want to make love to a right-winger for free? Who would do that? I don't know. Anyway. but I am looking forward to the trip to Denver. We're going to be there throughout the convention. Monday through Thursday, we'll be doing the program from Invesco Field on Thursday, the Pepsi Center on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And we got this odd list from the Secret Service. We're credentialed. We have credentials to go to the venue each day. I'm having trouble talking today. I don't know why. But there's all sorts of convention parties, and anyway, the Secret Service sends out this list of rules, the things that you can and can't do. And get a load of this list that the Secret Service sends of things that are prohibited from the convention center. They're going to do a final security sweep of the entire place on Friday, this coming Friday. And then after that, you have to get searched and all that sort of thing when you go in. So, they send out this list. You're not allowed to take the following items you can't take into the Pepsi Center. weapons, plastic replicas of weapons, firearms. Aren't firearms weapons? Knives, regardless of size, explosives, fireworks, toy guns, baseballs. I don't know what that's about. Umbrellas. You cannot take an umbrella into the convention center. No poles or sticks. No laser lights and laser pointers. No coolers. This is the one that fascinates me. This one really fascinates me. You cannot take any whole fruit into the Pepsi Center in Denver. No whole fruit. So I guess you can take like half an orange or half an apple or half a peach, but not a whole one. You can't take any containers of any type, bottles, cans, or spray containers. No aerosols, no mace or pepper spray. No sharp and or pointed objects, razor blades, scissors, knitting needles. No screwdrivers. No Leatherman or similar tools. What do you do if you got an equipment problem? No noisemakers such as air horns, whistles, drums, unless authorized by the DNCC officials. No banners, signs, or placards, which means we can't put our Head On Radio Network banner or Guy James Show banner up. No flashlights, unless authorized by the DNCC, Department of Production or Security. No unopened envelopes or packages will be permitted inside the Democratic National Convention perimeter. And all items must be opened and available for inspection screening. So there we have it. We have the rules. Oh, I'm reminded, when I mentioned umbrellas, I'm reminded of one of the old 007 movies, was it, where they had an umbrella gun? yeah. But anyway, those are the rules, and I'm looking forward to it. We've got a lot of good guests lined up during the convention, and we'll try and bring you the nuanced items from the convention. You'll see TV, and you'll get the, you know, CBS and NBC and ABC and all those guys. They'll put their take on it. But we're gonna nose around and find the real crazy things that happen at the things you won't hear anyplace else, and or else put our spin on it anyway. Not spin. We don't do any spinning here, but put our take on what we see. So that should be interesting, and I really am looking forward to it. We're going from Fort Myers to Dallas, Fort Worth, and then on to Denver, and then coming home. Oh, I got a story to tell you. I've got this story to tell you. What did I do with it here? I'm heading out to the convention, and I bought my ticket a couple of months ago. And I booked it on American Airlines after swearing that I would never, ever, ever, ever fly on American Airlines again after getting treated so poorly by them when they lost my luggage in Washington, D.C. last year, including my broadcast equipment. They found it, and they got it to me in time, but it scared me half to death, worried me sick that I was going to miss, Campaign for America's Future Take Back America conference. But they lost it, and the point being, I know that happens, but they were none too nice about it. None too nice about it all. The people that worked for American Airlines at National Airport in Washington, D.C. were absolutely disgusting. Here we had a plane that had about 40 people on it, myself included, who had their luggage lost, misplaced. I guess they sent it to New York or something. And they did deliver it to me around, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that. I can't remember for sure. But they were rude. They were arrogant. They were horrible people. And I swore right then and there I would never fly American Airlines again because of the treatment. Not because the luggage was lost. That happens. So the flights I needed to go to Denver, naturally, were with American Airlines. And we had planned on coming back on Thursday, before the final night of the convention. But as things worked out, the folks that planned the event wanted us to stay until Friday, and we said we would do that. And so we had to rebook the trip home. Now, here's where this whole thing gets dicey. booked that trip a couple of months ago in American Airlines. It was $390 round trip to Denver. It's about right nowadays. The price is up a little bit. $390 round trip. That's coach. Guy James doesn't fly first class unless we get lucky. So I have to change it until Friday, and I call the folks that arranged all this. Said, "Fine, go ahead and change it to Friday. We'll pay the whatever cost to change the ticket and all." So I was completely expecting when I called American Airlines to be charged to change the ticket. I've never had to do that before. Right off the bat, the first thing out of their mouth was, it'll cost you $150 to change the ticket. Now, I happen to think that's rather exorbitant. And it is. $150 just to change a ticket to the following day. After all, there is a convention going on. They will be able to sell that ticket. So, she said it'll be $150. And then she said a little phrase that I wasn't exactly sure I heard right, but I glossed over it. I didn't think much of it. Plus, any change in fare. So she goes to check what it'll be, and she finds a flight for me the next day. I had a choice of several, and she gives me the one that I wanted, and which was the least expensive, by the way. And she said, "All right, Mr. James, that'll be $150 plus the change in fare of $840." And I said, I think I misunderstood you, or you misunderstood me. All I wanted to do was change my ticket to the next day." That's right, Mr. James. I understand. It's $150 to change the ticket, and it's $840 for change of fare. The fare has gone up by $840. Well, now, since I only paid $390 for the round-trip ticket in the first place, you understand this sounded rather ludicrous to me. And just very matter-of-factly, he said, "Well, Mr. James, that's what it is. It'll come to a total of $990. Well, now, having paid only $390 for the round-trip in the first place, I was a bit put off by this whole thing, and I was a bit put off by her arrogant attitude once again. It was like, well, take it or leave it. It's $990. If she'd have just said, "Yeah, I know, it's like, we're really getting you, mister." I said, "That's it, $990. She said, "Well, the reason the fare is so much higher is, when we're having to upgrade you by changing you to the next day, and your ticket will be refundable. Right now you have a non-refundable ticket, and your ticket will be refundable, and it'll be the best coach ticket you can get." Well, tell me now, once you're behind that first class section, except for exit rows, what exactly is the best coach ticket that you can get? It's the same as all the others in the cattle department. It's coach. Unless you're lucky enough to be in an exit row and have a few inches extra leg room, you're back there with the rest of the cattle. But that was the reasoning. We're upgrade you to a fully refundable coach ticket, and it's only $840. Well, there's no refund, no nothing. You're just out. And I could not come home on Thursday. I cannot. So I checked around with other airlines. And I found that on Southwest, I could find a one-way ticket at a really good time when I wanted to come home through Atlanta, then to Fort Myers, for $230 some odd bucks, $235 or something like that. American Airlines wanted $990 on top of what I had already paid. And I got the round trip the one-way trip home from Southwest for $237. Now you tell me, what the hell is that about? And I could have got a one-way ticket home even on American Airlines for $500 and some. Why is American Airlines so much higher than everybody else? Their seats are just as uncomfortable as everybody else. Their seats are just as narrow as everybody else's. You have just this little leg room, as you do on every other plane. The only ones I know of that got extra leg room, JetBlue seems to have a little extra leg room. But anyway, I just wanted to mention to you, before you fly from now on, make sure that you don't have to fly with American Airlines. Make sure that you don't ever have to change your seat. Man, was I shocked about that. Absolutely shocked about that. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here in the program. Do you have a flying story you'd like to tell? I had another one here someplace I wanted to tell. Of course, that one's a true and authentic experience. But I see that they're wanting to take the kids. Airline passengers want kids seated in a separate section, and I'll tell you what, I would vote for this. Last time I flew was, I don't know, not very long ago. Anyway, I was coming home from up north, and there was a woman sitting in front of me in the middle row who had a kid that was about 2 years old that never shut up. And I understand about kids and all, but never shut up the entire trip. The kid must have been young enough that she didn't have to pay for another ticket, and that kid jumped up and down and screamed and squirmed, I swear, the entire way home. I would have bought the little guy a couple of drinks if I'd had a chance. But just screamed and carried on, and all the people that sat in that section were just totally flipping out after about 30 minutes of this. And the mom was one of those typical new moms of nowadays that I see just sitting there just telling the kid, be quiet. Oh, be quiet now. Be a good little boy. And the kid was just driving everyone nuts. So I think as a section, if you've got kids, that they've got it walled off in the back of the air, and I love kids, but they have to have a section walled off, and I like this on the chat room, and be given tranquilizers before boarding. here, kid, they're going to slip you a Mickey. So the story, anyway, about the kids, the airlines nowadays don't want to give us free snacks or check our luggage for free. Chances are they're not going to go for a new idea that the majority of the flying public would like to see, a separate section for children. And we're not referring to the overhead bins, which wouldn't be a bad idea. Boy, I'm sounding like a real curmudgeon here, aren't I? A new survey by AirfareWatchdog.com reveals 85% of the flying public would like to see children placed in a separate section of the plane. Amen, brother. The question was, should airlines have a section of the plane reserved for parents with babies and smaller children? And the responses were thus. 58% of respondents replied yes, they should have done this a long time ago. 27% answered yes, but they never will and it'll never work. And just 15% answered no, this is the bad idea. Well, those are the 15% with the little kids, I guess. Since the idea is just an idea, AirfareWatchdog.com recommends the following tips to mitigate the effects of screaming babies and bratty kids. Never travel without noise-blocking headphones. Have you priced those things? Ooh, they're expensive. Try to sit in the first exit row of planes that offer two exit rows. Children are not allowed to sit in an exit row. Well, big deal. So they're two seats away from you. Take early morning flights available. This is a good one. Parents rarely manage to dress, feed, and organize infants and small children in time to catch a 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. flight. And speak up, which I will do and have done, speak up and talk to the kid's parent politely but firmly. And if that doesn't work, ask a flight attendant to reseat you. Well, you know what you're going to get on a full plane if you're going to ask to be reseated. And, of course, they're going to look at you funny. I feel bad for the flight attendants. How did I get off on talking about all this plane stuff? Oh, it was that American Airlines crap, $990 to change $990. I see, they were sending aid to Georgia. Not the one right above Florida. Yeehaw. And demanding that the Russians withdraw. Because, as Bush said, it just isn't acceptable for one nation to invade another with military force. That just isn't cool. Unless you're Bush and you're doing it. Isn't that the height of arrogance right there? We're going to have, in the second half of the program today, we're going to have Eric Bollert from Media Matters. You see Eric on TV quite a bit on Tweety Bird Show and some of the CNN shows. And we're going to talk about this Jerome Corsi book. Did you see Paul Waldman against, and I'm just going to say it that way, against that Jerome Corsi on Larry King? I don't watch Larry King as a rule. I don't care for Larry King, but I did see a video of Paul Waldman, whom we had on the program not too long ago, when he wrote that book, Free Ride, by John McCain, or about John McCain. Anyway, Paul got a hold of this Jerome Corsi on there and shredded him. I don't think I've ever seen anyone get their ass kicked so bad in a political discussion on TV as what he did. So we're going to discuss that in the second hour today with Eric Bollert from MediaMatters.com. I'm sure some of you will have something to say about that. What do you think about these... I had a note here sitting for myself. I don't know what I did with it. There it is. What do you think about these VP selections that they're talking about right now? You got an idea about them? Do you have a real passion for any of them? On Obama's side, we've got Evan Bayh from Indiana. Personally, I'm against that one. Maybe some of you from Indiana really love Evan Bayh. I think he's all right. But I don't think he's got the fire in his belly necessary to go out and run the kind of campaign that we need right now. I don't think he's got it in him to go be an attack dog, which is what we need right now. And many of you may disagree with me, but I believe we do need an attack dog right now. Because I think when it comes to that, I think we're getting it shoved in our faces once again. I watched the Al Gore campaign. I've watched the John Kerry campaign. I don't like what I'm seeing so far in this one. So I think we have to have somebody out there with some cojones that'll go at these people. And I don't think Evan Bayh's the guy to do it. Let's head on over to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, Dave in California.
Hi, Dave.
And I am looking forward to you being at the convention. One thing I heard yesterday, and it came through loud and clear, we now have conclusive evidence. What's his name? Robert Miller, he's written the book entitled Loser Take All, and it's the insiders' proof that the last several elections have been rigged. And that tells me right now we no longer have a democracy. That has to be a key subject of that convention, and nobody seems to have the gall to bring it up.
No, it won't be brought up at all. I can promise you it won't. Not any place where there's any microphones. People will talk about it in the corridors and in the back rooms, but it won't get talked about publicly whatsoever.
But that literally means that our democracy is dead. That these people that have designed these machines are, in fact, out there rigging each and every election. We are supposed to get another Republican for president again. And they're already rigging the polls to make us think that it's much closer than it is.
Well, the poll I saw today was 1 point. And I had hoped by now that the American public could come to their senses, and if we had accurate polls, and I can't believe all of them are rigged, I would have thought he'd have a 20-point lead if there was any justice in this world, but he doesn't. And now, if it's going to be really close again, there you go. I mean, there's the perfect chance for him once again if it's close.
Well, all this patriarchy, technology enabled these tech goons to go into your computer and flip whatever results they would like to flip. So if a poll is taken, Zogby, ABC, whatever, they enter that data into a computer, dispenses, and into that computer goes biotech folks, and they make the results come out just the way they want them to come out. We're having that happen to us all over the place. And to sit quietly by and let that happen to this country is unthinkable.
Well, it is, Dave, if that's what's happening. I hope it's not as widespread as that. I have a problem with the fact that if this were happening on a really wide-scale basis around the country, that wouldn't somebody talk?
They've got them talking now. There's insiders that are saying, yes, it happened. We were a part of doing it. And unimpeachable saying that this is the election 2000, 2002, 4, 6, and 8 all were rigged.
Well, if that would be the case, we're living in a type of government that a lot of people gave their lives to fight against years ago.
I know. It's just it's a nightmare of the worst kind. But I'm hoping you and Head-On will get on it more because, you know, I think people don't want to believe it. I think you want to, the part of you that wants to say they aren't that bad, are they? They aren't stealing the elections, are they? You want to think that. No, they're stealing the elections.
Oh, I don't put it past them to do, and I've said that word many times, anything necessary to retain power. And anything, as you know, covers everything. But I have trouble trying to convince myself that they could get away with this. But I'm sure it has happened. I'm sure that they've worked at it. I'm sure they are working at it again right now. I'm sure they are. I just hope there's enough due diligence on the part of many people around the country that will hopefully keep it from happening. And
the name is escaping me at the moment. It was on the Tom Hartman show yesterday, and his book is entitled Loser Take All, and the velvetrevolution.org, I believe, is giving it full play. So if you want to look it up, but if corporate media does not want to cover anything like this, this is not a Democrat stunt. This is Republicans doing
it. Well, if it does happen, I hope it's fished out and everybody gets fleshed out and everybody have a chance to see it.
I hope so, too.
Dave, thanks for your call. Good to
Thank
hear from you.
Thank you, Guy.
I haven't heard anybody talk publicly about it in the party, and they're not going to. They don't. They just don't. Why? I don't know. We were talking about Vice President a minute ago. Evan Bayh, no, not my favorite. And we would lose that seat in the Senate because Miss Daniels, the governor of Indiana, would appoint a Republican, so we'd lose that seat. Tim Kaine from Virginia, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think he's got enough experience, and I think that he, nice guy that he is, I've met Tim. I don't think that he's experienced enough in politics to do that, to be the VP. And again, I don't think he's got the fire in the belly that they need. Joe Biden. I like Joe. Joe's a talker. Joe's a little bit of a loose cannon. They've had objections about Bill Clinton out on the stump. I think you might run into that with Joe Biden now and then as well. Joe doesn't mind speaking his mind, and sometimes Joe gets a little carried away. I like the guy. I like him a lot. I still haven't forgiven him for voting for the bankruptcy bill. I'll never forgive him for that, and by the way, I told him that. Being from the state of Delaware, they are beholden to the banking business, and I'm trying to find a politician that isn't beholden to somebody, and I still can't find one. But I would be just fine with Joe Biden. I would be absolutely fine. That would be a good ticket. That would be a good way to balance the ticket. Not going to gain him any political territory over there anyplace. Not going to help in the South, and not going to help anywhere, on the East Coast, get another state, turn a red state blue. It won't do that. But for those who have doubts about foreign policy experience on the Democratic side, man, oh, man, you couldn't do better than getting Joe Biden in on there. You could not do better than that. And who knows? Maybe they'll surprise us all and pick Hillary. I can, Kathleen Sebelius has been mentioned, and I do agree with the folks in the Clinton camp that it would be probably a slap in the face to the Hillary camp if he did pick Kathleen Sebelius. If he decided that a woman ought to be on the ticket, and if he did it for that reason, then I'm sure the Hillary people will be plenty pissed off about that. I don't know whether he'll do that or not, but who knows? Expect it to come tomorrow, the next day. We're going to hear choice tomorrow, the next day. I'm pretty sure that's the way it looks. But over on the Republican side, what do you do if you're John McNasty McCain there? Who do you pick? All I know is this. They say Pawlenty from Minnesota is leading the list. Bobby Jindal, after his latest interview on TV, he had to drop off. Another one had that deer in the headlights look. Tell us what McCain has done. Just couldn't come up with anything, just like the governor of South Carolina. Can't think of his name right now. But the thing has got me excited about the John McNasty McCain selection of VP is we've been hearing for several days now, from insiders even, that it could be Joe Lieberman. And if it would be Joe Lieberman, I would be absolutely ecstatic. Ecstatic if it were Joe Lieberman. I mean, I encourage you. I implore you. I beg you, John Sidney McCain, to pick Joe Lieberman as your VP. Oh, my God, I would be happy if he did that. Because if they get beat, where would Lieberman go then? He's a pariah in the Democratic Party right now. Nobody wants his ass anymore, and the sooner the Democrats chuck him out of any chairmanships and everything that he may have, the better. I believe that he doesn't deserve, seniority or not, he doesn't deserve anything, any chairmanship of any kind. I don't care how long he's been in the Senate. I don't care. He should be out, completely out. I don't know if they can officially kick him out of the party or what. And of course, officially, he's not in the party right now. Officially, he's an independent. I believe that's the way it is anyway. But would McCain pick him for VP? And if they lost, hell, the Republicans would all hate him too. So where would he go? He'd be a man without a country, a man without a party. He's been McCain's shadow for months now anyway. The guys might as well move in together. Him and that little dweeb from South Carolina. They've been over his shoulder every place you see him. Every place. And he is going to speak at the Republican convention. Yes, McCain, that right there. I mean, I think the Democrats, I think Harry Reid ought to tell him. They ought to call him into a room and tell him, listen here, you, if you go speak on behalf of John McCain at the Republican convention, you can kiss your ass goodbye of any chairmanships or anything to do with caucusing with the Democrats. I know we'd be losing his vote on some of the votes, but get him out. Get him out. He's a disgrace to the Democratic Party that he was ever a Democrat in the first place. And if I've ever had a bone to pick with Al Gore, Joe Lieberman is it, because I just couldn't get over the fact that Al Gore picked Joe Lieberman to be his vice president. I couldn't stand him then. I can't stand him even more now. And I thought that that was the worst decision that Al Gore had ever made in his life. And I'll bet you if you went back and ask Al Gore right now, if he'd speak to you from the heart and tell you the truth, he would agree that that was the worst thing that he's ever done politically, was to pick to associate himself with Joe Lieberman in any way, shape, or form. And then they're saying, I see that Nudie Boy and Hannity, knowing that Lieberman would be a rock hanging around McNasty's neck, are saying, well, you know, that may be good Secretary of State. Oh, God, give me a break. Can you imagine Joe Lieberman? Oh, he'd be good Secretary of State with Israel. Yes, he might as well be their Secretary of State. From everything I've seen, he'd be a great Secretary of State for Israel. But can you imagine Joe Lieberman being the Secretary of State? I can't. I just cannot. So I don't know. I don't know where this is going to end up. They're saying McCain will probably announce the day after the Democratic Convention in order to take some of the shine off the Democratic Convention, some of the glow that there will be, if there is any glow after it's over. Who knows? Convention is going to be interesting. I was reading a story today about the convention, and so far I've been looking in my email, and I haven't seen any invitations. But the corporate donors and lobbyists are taking advantage of loopholes in the federal election law and the congressional ethics rules to contribute more, and now listen to this figure, contribute more than $112 million. That's $112 million. Corporate donors and lobbyists are giving to the Democratic and Republican National Conventions. This flood of unlimited soft money from special interests and the lavish parties and the whining and the dining that it pays for at the convention absolutely runs counter to the federal election law and congressional ethics rules. And adding insult to injury, much of this money is given under the pretense of boosting the economies of the host cities. And all that's according to a report released today by Public Citizen. We've had Public Citizen's representatives on this show many times. In recent years, the conventions have become lavish parties paid for by special interests seeking favors from the elected officials instead of the public-financed electoral events that they were supposed to be. You remember back when conventions were really exciting? When we didn't know who the candidate was going to be. Yes, I'm old enough to actually remember that. It was just absolutely incredibly exciting. And it would be again if we didn't know. Now we've got the way we do it now with the primaries and all, frankly, I think it sucks. But the conventions have become nothing but big parties. Many of the people, the high rollers, you'll see them at these big private parties at the convention, and they'll be financed by private money. Public Citizens came out and said, corporations have turned our national nominating conventions into an opportunity for executives and lobbyists to wine, dine, and schmooze lawmakers, all under the pretense of public purpose. Public Citizen President Joan Claybrook said, the only way to return these conventions to the public is to close the loopholes and remove the influence of special interests from the conventions. Amen. But they have these lavish parties, and there will be several every night, and some people will hop back and forth to these things. VIP access to the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, the Democratic host committees are going to get donors VIP tickets to the Denver Convention Center and the first consideration for popular Denver venues. So far, Nearly 400 parties are scheduled to be thrown at the conventions. 400 of them. Many of them hosted by corporations, lobbyists, and lobbying organizations. Yes, sir, there's nothing like tipping a drink with a big corporate sponsor if you're a congressman or somebody in the party. And they say that they don't buy votes, and the politicians say they don't sell votes. Give me a break. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
My heart would sink to the lowest depths if they pick by.
Oh.
You remember the namby-pamby debate between Lieberman and Cheney?
Oh, yeah.
Lieberman sat there with that silly smile on his face?
Mm-hmm.
And... I'm afraid this guy be the same way. I want a scrapper.
I do, too. I want someone that...
And it definitely, they put something in online last week saying that he was going to announce that it would be Biden, and I don't know why in the world. And he's not a... He is more Republican in my mind. Biden is.
You mean by?
Yeah.
Heaven
bye. Bye. Yeah, bye. Oh, Lord. But anyway, how did you do with the storm? I think it came right your way, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It crossed just slightly to the east here, but it was not really a big deal. We had high winds. The bands.
The lights didn't go out at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had that. We had
We miss it here, and, of course, the thing is doing loop-de-loops, so it's supposed to be going back into Florida. I think it's out.
Oh, man. Well, you know how it is, and I'm sure maybe it's not quite the same up where you live in Florida, but everybody should understand this. When they announce that a hurricane's coming, especially the first time of the year during hurricane season and the first one's coming, man, oh, man, people go crazy. They just go crazy. They run in. First thing everybody does, tell us, Juanita, what's the first thing everybody does? Where do they go buy when?
Groceries.
Yay, go to the grocery store.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing left hardly in the grocery store.
Canned goods and water. Canned goods and water. Bottled water, gallon jugs of water. And the other thing they go do is buy gasoline. And everybody goes, and of course, panic starts setting in. I was at the office Sunday afternoon, and people started calling me, and friends that I know would call and tell me, "Oh, the gas stations are closing up. They're running out of gas. They don't have any gas." Well, when I got out of the office and started looking around, there weren't any gas stations closed. But you know how that goes, don't you? Living in Florida.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, everybody. I must say. I have a generator at my home, and I go buy gas for my generator, just a little generator that'll run a couple of fans and, you know.
Well, that's the thing I hate the most, you know, unless there's big damage, is being without lights.
Oh, yeah. We suddenly understand what it was like 100 years ago, don't we? And did you ever find yourself doing this? And I suppose all of our listeners have you ever, and they're right, Lilo's on the chat room says buy batteries too. Everybody does that. Buy batteries. Everybody buys batteries for
batteries,
their flashlights and stuff.
Candles now.
Yeah, batteries and candles. Did you ever go when the lights are out, when your power's off, and go flip a switch anyway, thinking it was gone? Find your habit. You have a flashlight in your hand and walk into another room and flip the light switch like something's going to happen.
But you know, when I was growing, I grew up in Florida, and we had fun when we were kids, and no matter what happened.
Oh yeah,
we had a family that had they stayed with us because they didn't think their house was safe. And it just completely took their house off the foundation.
Oh.
Just set it down. I mean, everything else was okay, the roof and everything. So they just left it there and built up another floor.
and the, so would you consider yourself a Florida cracker?
That's what they called me, so I guess so.
I guess so. Now I'm told that for those of you that don't live in Florida, I'm told the term cracker is not derogatory. That it really started back in the days, and a lot of you don't know that Florida at one time, I don't know about anymore. In fact, it's not anymore. But at one time, Florida was the largest cattle state in the country.
Yeah.
And
it still is, isn't it?
I don't know that it's number one anymore, but and so they named that
yeah, it's not known for that.
That word cracker came from the guys on horseback that herded cattle cracking their whips.
You're kidding.
Yeah, that's what I'm told. But that's a term given to somebody that's born and raised in Florida.
Yeah.
And so the other day before...
I wasn't born in Florida.
Oh, well, you were raised here, though, so you're a semi-cracker. a honorary cracker.
I'm one of them Georgia Hicks, I guess.
I had somebody working on the... over where I live, had somebody working on the water system the other day when the thing was coming on Monday. I think, yeah, was it Monday or Sunday? Anyway, I said, are you all ready for the hurricane? And the guy, being the Florida cracker that he is, says, hell yes, I'm ready for the hurricane. I've got me a couple of cases of beer, and I'm ready. So you hear that once in a while, too.
Yeah, we always used to listen to the radio till it couldn't, you know, like a battery or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're pretty much incommunicado.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots to out. The ones that went through the last time, you know, the three that came here directly, I did have a battery radio, and all I could get was Orlando station, and it was really good. It was really good, except I was introduced to Glenn Beck at that time.
Oh, well, congratulations.
And then, Rush Limbaugh, and I turned him off. But they had another guy up there, a young guy that he was liberal. He was so good.
Oh,
him and another girl on there. But
they
saved me.
They probably killed him by now.
Probably.
Hey, Juanita, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Okay, you take care, and I'm looking forward to listening to you at the convention.
Well, good. We'll see what we can do about good interviews, and we'll have a lot to say.
And you know, tell them to get some firing going. You know.
Well, I told everybody.
We can listen to the Senate if we want to hear namby-pamby stuff.
That's right. I told Bob Kincaid the other day. Bob and I were chatting, and I know Sean Hannity's going to be there. And,
oh, yeah.
And I told him, I said, I've never met Sean Hannity, but if I do, you'll read about it in the newspaper. And then Bob brought me to my senses. He says, you know, if Hannity's there, they'll have him up in the Fox studio skybox or something. You won't get near him. And I know he takes bodyguards with him, so... Us poor folks, we can't afford bodyguards. We have to just do what we can.
And also when somebody comes up to him and asks a legitimate question, he can just give a signal to his bodyguard.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Get this guy out of here.
Yeah, he did that too in Utah when, you know, they were protesting about Michael Moore.
Yeah.
I saw that. Anybody... That is really a good documentary. It's just pretty wild.
Yeah, it is. It is. Our friend Bob Greenwald is getting together with Michael Moore and doing a little ditty here pretty soon. I heard from Bob yesterday, and a great guy. Bob does such good work. Terrific work, and Bob Greenwald.
I get a lot of emails from him.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
Hey, pardon?
I was going to thank you for calling, Juanita. Always good to hear from you.
I just wanted to say one thing about you're talking about Hannity. The last presidential election, I just happened to get this little tidbit from his show, and he had the guy from, you know, the guy that knows everything. He's the biggest Christian that ever walked. Psychologist, what's his name? Anyway, he was on Hannity's, and Hannity said, "Oh, I'm going to the Democratic convention. Please pray for me." "Oh, I will. I will."
Oh my. Believe it or not, at the Democratic convention, where I'm staying, I've got a couple of right wingers staying just down the hall from me. No kidding. Broadcasters. Yeah.
You behave yourself now.
Yeah, one of them's from Atlanta. I'm staying at an inn, and I'm kind of in charge of the transportation for the week with the DNC people at where I'm staying. And this one, her name is Martha Zoller, and she has a right-wing talk show from out of Atlanta. So if I have to drive a couple of those folks around, this is going to be an interesting conversation.
You're going to have to drive them?
Well, I'm not going to have to drive them, but we're going to share a vehicle, I think, because every place is a good...
Well, I trust you to handle it well.
Oh, I'll be a perfect gentleman, I think.
Well.
Thanks for calling, Winnie. Good to hear
you're
from
welcome.
You.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's a fact. I've got two right-wingers staying where I'm staying, and they're doing transportation, all this with rental cars and all that sort of thing, but we have to share a ride, and I know I've got two right-wingers. Let me see what their name. One of them is Martha Zoller. She has a show out of Atlanta, and this other guy, Dom Giordano, I think he's from Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken. So this should be interesting. I will be reporting results of those conversations to you, I'm sure. Oh, my. Oh, we've talked probably too much about the convention today, but I am looking forward to it. I don't know what kind of coverage the major networks are going to have. I don't know if they're going to cover it gavel to gavel. It's going to start, it's going to be gaveled to order. I like Lilo's suggestion. Maybe you should lose your way, I guess, while we're driving and convert them. You know, I think I could do that. If you can just get somebody to listen to reason. You've noticed that, haven't you, with your friends and family and all. If you can just get them to listen. Just listen and engage you in civil conversation and open their ears and listen to facts and accept things that are facts. You can usually change people's minds about things. People that are, but when you see that you cannot, under any circumstances, convince somebody that red is red and black is black and white is white, why then give up and talk about something else? Because I don't know, it's just no fun to fight with those people. When you fight with an idiot, why, you end up looking just about as bad sometimes, and we all fall into that trap. But I've gotten better at it over the years when I finally realized that, hey, you're talking to a numbskull here. That was one of my dad's favorite sayings, numbskull. When you're talking to a numbskull, give it up. Just move on. Talk about baseball or something. Because you're not going to get anywhere. I know several people like that, and I know all of you do as well. So I'm not saying these right-wingers I'm going to be living close to next week are numbskulls. Not, in fact, the one sounds very, very nice anyway. So we'll see. I might be able to report when I come back next week that I've converted a couple of them, and they're going to be lefties on the radio. Of course, they'll both get fired. That's the first thing. The local newspaper called today, the Fort Myers News Press, and interviewed me about going to the convention. And after the interview, the guy says to me, "Well, no kidding. This is what he said to me. I'm going to try and get this in the paper." But you know where we live here, and it may be difficult. Now, isn't it news if I'm the only media person from this entire area that's going to the convention and going to do a live show? Isn't that kind of news in the media section of the newspaper, isn't it? But not if you're a Democrat. Not if you're a liberal Democrat like myself. Fascinating. Even the Naples Daily News newspaper knows about this, and they have not even given the courtesy of calling for an interview as of yet. So that's what we're faced with in the area where we live here. If you were the only Democrat in the world going to it, they wouldn't do anything about it, probably. We'll see. We'll see if the local paper does, but I'm not holding my breath on it, that's for certain. Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour, and don't forget we've got Eric Bollard from Media Matters coming up in the next hour to talk about this Jerome Corsi clown. And we'll be back in just a little bit, so don't go away.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. United Auto Workers President Ron Gettelfinger says that Senator Barack Obama is taking action to support American workers that will help automakers build cars of the future right here in the U.S. That includes a pledge of $4 billion in investments and low-interest credit for American auto companies. In stark contrast, Gettelfinger says, is Senator John McCain. The UAW president says that McCain seems content to rely upon the failed policies of George W. Bush, which have cost American workers millions of good-paying manufacturing jobs. Gettelfinger says when it comes to which candidate will be best for the country's workers, the UAW believes the choice for president could not be more clear. Obama, the union says, is committed to changing failed policies, while McCain is offering nothing but more of the same failed economic policies. A California bill could make it easier for farm workers there to unionize, Jesse Russell reports.
Allegedly, six farm workers have died from heat exhaustion this year alone. Since 2003, it has been 15. A new bill that was passed by the California Assembly could make it easier for farm workers to join a union. Unions could request a mediated election, which would allow workers to fill out a ballot, or they could cast their vote in the traditional booth style. The idea is that allowing workers to fill out a ballot away from the booth election would relieve some of the pressure workers are put under by growers as they go to vote. The bill also establishes penalties if union organizers attempt to influence the ballot voting. Democrats that voted in favor of the bill believe that a unionized farm workforce would be better suited to protecting workers from heat exhaustion. The bill needs to return to the Assembly for Senate amendments and then will go to the desk of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. The governor had previously vetoed two similar bills.
Unemployment for black men in America is high. In New York City's Red Hook District of Brooklyn, it's well over 20%. James Brodick is project director at the Red Hook Community Justice Center, where they're working to help neighborhood residents get job opportunities.
What we're trying to do is reach out to the business owners and say, hey, is there different forms or different opportunities we can bring you in where you can meet some of our residents?
Brodick says a tough economy generally makes it even harder to find opportunities for residents in low-income city neighborhoods. Now here's Jesse Russell with today's economic report.
Housing starts fell to their lowest point in 17 years during the month of July. That is an 11% drop since June. Meanwhile, producer prices jumped to their highest rate in 27 years in July, creating across-the-board price increases for everything from automobiles to prescription drugs. The jump in the producer price index was 1.2% over June and 9.8% over the same time last year.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Every vet respects John McCain's war record. It's his record in the Senate that I have a problem with. He wants us to keep spending $10 billion a month in Iraq, just like Bush. That's money we could use to build schools and roads and create needed jobs here at home. He even took sides with Bush against increasing health care benefits for veterans. People should let John McCain know. His agenda is not what we need. Not now.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? In my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Guy James Show. Sitting here high and dry after Faye went blowing through here yesterday. Hey, we looked face square in the eye. You know, some of the things, I don't want to belabor the point, some of you that don't live in the tropics like we do here, some of the weird things you do to get ready for a storm. First of all, you have to go out to, and got to go out to the pool, and you got to get all the furniture, and most people just throw the pool furniture into the pool. You want to remove anything around the property that may become a projectile, any branches of trees that may have blown down, any palm fronds, flower pots, anything that the wind can pick up and throw as a projectile toward your house. Why, you got to go around and do all that. Man, the things people do. All the car dealers take all their cars and park them up close to their building, and they take any big trucks they got and park them around the showroom glass so that it won't get broken. And I still don't know. There's a Mercedes dealer right up the road, a brand new Mercedes dealer with hundreds of cars. And when I went by there yesterday, there wasn't a single car left on that lot. I don't know what they could have done with them. There's no warehouse, there's no big building around here big enough to put them in. What did they do with them? That's what I want to know. I've got to find out. Hey, we're going to have Eric Bollard on with us just a few minutes, coming up at a quarter past the hour. They took a survey of bartenders in the Washington, D.C. area. The Beam Global Spirits and Wine Corporation. And came up with some interesting facts that you should know how bartenders rate the political parties. Of course, Republicans and Democrats differ on more than just their opinions on foreign policy and their health care and the economy and all. So I wanted to find out how bartenders rate them. Well, who's the best tippers? 60% of the 100 bartenders surveyed in Washington, D.C. say, of course, Democrats are the better tippers by a 60 to 38 margin. So there you go. Who's more likely to order a drink straight up? 82% the Republicans and only 14% the Democrats. Now, what does that mean exactly? Are the Democrats wimpier when they drink? Or Or the Republicans bigger alcoholics? Maybe that's it. That's got to be it. Who's likely to order a fruity drink? A fruity drink? How's he mean that? Oh, 58% Democrats are more likely to order a fruity drink and 34% Republicans. I have a cousin listening right now that likes a certain kind of wine. I'm trying to think what it is. Blackberry wine? Plum wine? I'm not sure if she's a Democrat or Republican, though. I think she's somewhere in the middle. and by the way, who has the better pickup lines? 74% say the Democrats have the better pickup lines, and 14% say the Republicans have the better pickup lines. Well, that's good. That's good. The Democrats got the better pickup lines. Who's better at giving a toast? Democrats by 63 to 36%. All right. You've all heard that one. Friends may come and friends may go. Friends may peter out, you know. And here's to friends thick and thin. You know the rest. All right. Who's more likely to arrive first to happy hour? 50% say the Republicans are going to arrive first, and only 48% the Democrats. So that one's pretty close. And who's more likely to be the last to go home? Well, 53% say the Democrats are the last to go home, and 46% say the Republicans. It's probably because the Democrats are more engaging people. They like to sit around and talk and more gregarious than the Republicans. So I don't know. My favorite one of those, though, is who has the better pickup line? 74% of the Democrats got the better pickup lines. I wonder why that is. I don't really know. Don't know what it is for sure. Anyway, we've got a guest coming up very shortly. And we're going to talk about Jerome Corsi. And, of course, this movement that started, 28 years ago? That sowed, in my opinion, hatred and bigotry, and that shall be called and always is called in this program the neocon movement that came to real power during the administration of St. Ronald Reagan, and it's struggling to hold on to that power, and they're doing it in the only way they know how, and that's by lying and distorting the truth about their opponent, Barack Obama. And once again, they're getting away with it. And you've heard plenty about Jerome Corsi's new book on Obama, and it's nothing more than another heap of lies and slander against a good man. If you've seen Corsi, he thinks Obama's a commie, a socialist, a Marxist, who's planning to overthrow our government as we know it. He thinks he's a true Manchurian candidate, and this book is nothing more than a steaming pile of fresh Republican horseshit, and we'll talk about it with Eric Bullard from Media Matters coming up in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
For Wednesday, August 20th, this is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, both the Associated Press and ABC World News uncritically reported Senator John McCain's charges that Senator Barack Obama has tried to prevent funding for the troops who carried out the surge.
McCain has attacked Obama for being a shallow celebrity, anti-troops, to blame for the energy crisis, and today he called him a flip-flopper who put self-interest before country.
What these outlets failed to mention is that Obama has repeatedly voted in the past to provide funds for fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, and has said he voted against a troop funding bill in May of 2007 because it did not include a timetable for withdrawal. Further, McCain himself has voted against legislation to fund wars in both Afghanistan and Iraq. And once again, the most outrageous comment of the day goes to conservative talk radio host Michael Savage for his latest remarks on immigration.
Now, this is while the war is raging in the Caucasus. America is being overrun by an invasion force from Mexico that will soon take over the country. And minorities in America becoming the majority. Now, on the face of it, you say, well, what's wrong with that? How about everything is wrong with that?
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Do you hear me talking to you across the water, across the deep blue ocean, under the open sky? Oh my, baby, I'm trying.
Boy, I hear you in my dreams. I feel you whisper across the sea. I keep you with me in my heart. You make it easier when life gets hard. Lucky I'm in love with my best friend. Lucky to have been where I have been. Lucky to be coming home again.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, and now we have somebody I know you're all familiar with. I know you are. He was author of a book called How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. He worked for Salon Magazine and Rolling Stone and is now a senior fellow at Media Matters, and I'm talking about Eric Bullard. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Wanted to talk to you today about this gentleman that's making the rounds and got the number one, I think it's still number one, on the New York Times bestseller list, this Jerome Corsi character.
Yeah, Jerome was part of the one half of the writing team for the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth book from the August of 2004 that did real damage to the Kerry campaign. He wrote that with John O'Neill. And now he has a book out called The Obama Nation, which is a pretty standard sort of right-wing attack book. Spends a lot of time detailing Obama's youth, trying to make the insinuation that he's a Muslim and things like that. And just like the Swift Boat book was sort of launched by Fox News, Fox News sort of took the lead in the marketing of this book. And it was almost the exact same rollout where Corsi was invited back 2, 3, or 4 nights in early August to really try to gin up some controversy.
Oh, and Hannity in particular has been a real cheerleader for this guy.
Yeah, radio and television, absolutely. Just like the Swift Boat, it was the same blueprint. And I think, Republicans were hoping for the same outcome.
How does a book like this get to be a number one seller? I mean, you're an author, Eric. Explain to me, I mean, who buys this book? Doesn't the fact that many Americans read book like this make sort of a sad statement about where we're at?
I mean, the dirty little secret is that you don't have to sell all that many books to be on the number one bestsellers. The country just doesn't buy that many books.
Well, tell us, what is the dirty little secret? What numbers are we talking about here?
We're, 10 or 20,000 copies in a week. If you compare that to the music business, you have to sell 80 or 90,000 CDs in any given week to be number one. So it's much, and in terms of movie tickets, it doesn't even compare. If I had been on Fox News for 3 nights in prime time before the launch of my book, I guarantee I would have been on the top 10. I don't know if I would have been number one. The fact that Fox News gave him, at least an hour and a half of prime time television, for authors, that is invaluable, whether it's on Fox News or CNN. Authors simply are not invited on television in large blocks of time anymore, so that's a big deal. And you have to understand the conservative infrastructure. They buy a lot of these books in bulk, and then they give them to organizations who sort of hand them out for free, send them out to their mailing list for free. So it's somewhat deceptive because in terms of the Obama Nation book, not all those books were purchased by people going to the bookstore and paying 16 or 18 or however many dollars. There's right-wing, well-funded, organizations that will write very large checks in order to send these books up the bestseller list. Because, look, it was on Fox, of course he was on Fox News for several days, but he didn't hit the mainstream. Washington Post did a big story. New York Times did a big story. He didn't hit the mainstream until he got to number one. So that's sort of the trigger for the mainstream. Oh, it's number one. What they don't take into account is it goes to number one because the books are sort of cooked. But the right wing knows that. They know if they can get a book to number one, then the press will often pay attention. It's this sort of
And they get many, many to number one doing that. The fact is, you said he had like an hour and a half coverage.
If you add up all those appearances, absolutely.
That time would commercial time on TV would be worth far more than he'd ever get paid for that.
That's tens of millions of dollars in free marketing, absolutely, without a doubt. Look, I mean, most authors, when my book came out, prime time is just not even a question for most authors. If you can get on CNN in the middle of the day for 6 minutes, if you can get on the Jon Stewart show for 9 minutes, I mean, that's considered a home run. Everyone in the publicity department is thrilled if you can do that, let alone, going on, cable news for prime time for 20, 30, 40 minutes or an hour. That's sort of unheard of. It would be considered like an in-kind campaign contribution, what Fox is doing, really. They're donating. They're setting aside this incredibly valuable time to this one author, I think, in an effort to make a political point and in an effort to help him sell books.
Well, it works. As we all know, the Swift Boat book was certainly effective. I think you're absolutely right when you say it had an effect on that election. I did see where Mary Matlin's involved in the publication of this book.
Yep, she oversees an imprint within Simon & Schuster, so it's Simon & Schuster that's sort of paying for this whole marketing campaign for the Obama Nation book. If you go back about 10 years with the Ann Coulter books, with some of the Sean Hannity books, they have been enormously successful. A lot of them were published by sort of niche publishers. Regnery Press was sort of the most famous, came out of nowhere to sell tens of thousands of books from these right-wing authors. And so the mainstream publishers decided that they should get in on the act as well. And Simon & Schuster hired Mary Madeline, Dick Cheney's former very close aide, to oversee this book imprint. And she took Jerome Corsi, whose Swift Boat book actually came out on Regnery, brought him over, and they're going to publish the Karl Rove book. So it is a big business. I don't know a single mainstream publishing house that specifically has a liberal division, but a lot of them have imprints that do nothing but publish conservative books.
Fascinating. Of course, this guy doesn't have all that much credibility with even a lot of straight-thinking right-wingers, does he?
Well, there has been more pushback now than versus 4 years ago with the Swift Boat. Very, very, very few conservatives spoke out and really labeled that a smear campaign that it was. But we have seen a handful, particularly online, standing up and saying, this has, this guy has nothing to do with conservatism, has nothing to do with winning, with the direction of this country. This is just sort of nasty slime. Republicans have this tradition of sort of rewarding these hatchet men every 4 years and just basically saying this is not credible. We should not, as a movement, be associated with it. So I think that hurt Corsi. Much more what her, frankly, was the work of Media Matters, which really began fact-checking the book almost page by page the minute we got our hands on it, and just posted very straightforward errors that we found, the things that could not be documented, things that were just patently false. And we sort of put the mainstream media on press saying, if you're going to take this guy seriously, you have to take into account these egregious errors he's made in his book. And you can't just overlook that. If you're going to write about this guy, you have got to ask him about, and you've got to document the fact that a lot of the book just is without merit.
And I don't think I'd like to be able to ask Corsi a question, how much he regrets going on Larry King's show with Paul Waldman. I don't think I've ever seen anybody eaten alive like that on a program
It really was a turning point. And again, Paul Waldman is a colleague of mine from Media Matters, and he was on Larry King Live last week opposite Jerome Corsi. And this is exactly what did not happen during the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. I guarantee you, no one from Media Matters was ever invited to go on on prime time to go one-on-one with any of the Swiftboat accusers and make them document their allegations. But it really did show how dramatically the landscape has changed, and that CNN, the first time they had Corsi on prime time, they made him go opposite someone from Media Matters. And as you mentioned, I completely agree, and that's why the segment was really particularly celebrated online the next day. It really was just sort of a devastating performance, and really all Paul Waldman did really was highlight the fact that the book just was not credible. Corsi himself was not credible. His logic didn't add up. And he really, of course, you could just see his face getting redder and redder as the segment went on. And it did highlight why, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of conservatives will not be in public forums and media forums with anyone from Media Matters. And I think we saw exactly why, because they just can't withstand the rather simple scrutiny of the fact.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many times, a Limbaugh, a Hannity, many of these people are not accountable to anybody. They simply will not face somebody.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of times on CNN or in Newsweek or in the New York Times, I keep going back to the Swiftboat, but for weeks those people were not held accountable in any way, shape, or form. So they get an obvious free pass on Fox News or Rush Limbaugh, but in the past even the mainstream press wasn't asking the sort of the tough questions. But I think this time with the Corsi book, I think there was sort of a collective penance sort of going on, being done, and the press, I think, does understand now how it sort of fell down on the job during the 2004 campaign. And so this time the focus really was on Corsi and on his misstatement and about questions about his past, and the press didn't simply just, you know, amplify sort of the crazy allegations he was making in his book.
Well, like I said, it was so important, the Swift Boating book, that word, that phrase, Swift Boating, has become part of our vocabulary, and that's how effective it was last time around. What I'm wondering is, what precipitated Larry King having Paul on that show with him? We had Paul on our program here not too long ago, and frankly, I've watched that piece like five times. I can't get enough of it. That's the best ass kicking I've seen one of those right wingers get on TV for forever, I think.
Yeah, no, there was no yelling or shouting. It was just
no.
Just the fact. Well, I think what happened was, as I pointed out in my column, I think the other shift we've seen is Fox News is no longer the dominant ratings champ. And I think 4 years ago, they really, just by sheer will, just by sheer repetition, their sort of breathless coverage of the Swiftboat allegation, they pretty much forced CNN and MSNBC to jump on. And pretty soon, all three of them had become sort of media enablers. Fox is no longer, CNN beat Fox in the ratings for the first quarter, first time CNN had did that since 9/11, had done that since 9/11. And I think CNN and MSNBC, particularly in the political coverage, have realized there's no reason for us to be following Fox News' lead. And particularly for a Fox News-sponsored, attack campaign like the Corsi book. So I think they both said, not only are we not going to follow it, we're going to counteract it. And, okay, we're going to have Corsi on, but we're going to do the opposite of Fox, and we're going to hold him accountable. We're going to make him in a fair and accurate manner, make him answer these allegations about the falsehoods in his book. So I really did think they were sending a message to Fox saying, we're not going to follow you anymore. In fact, we can lead on our own. And I think we saw the imprint from that on the Corsi story.
I was sent your column. Where was that, on Media Matters?
Yeah, mediamatters.org. Yep.
It's a good one. It covers this whole thing very comprehensively, an excellent piece.
Thanks.
I check in with Media Matters just about every day, and I'm sure most of my listeners do We advertise ourselves as a democratic liberal talk show, and so I know, you know, what they're thinking most of the time. Yeah, this guy touts the fact that he's got a PhD from Harvard. Does anyone in academia give this guy any credence, have anything to do with him?
I don't think so, and I think one of the things that came up, the New York Times wrote about this, you know, not only is he writing about Barack Obama, but he's very much engaged in these 9/11 conspiracy theories. He's very much has been touting these allegations that explosives from inside the World Trade Center were responsible for the towers going down. He's talked about sort of this underground highway that's supposedly going from Mexico to Canada. He really has signed off in a fairly public way on some really wacky right-wing conspiracy theories. And the fact that a publisher like Simon & Schuster would look at his previous writings and say, yeah, you know, that's really the guy we want on our team is pretty amazing. But it did, unlike when he co-wrote the Swift Boat book and he was sort of overlooked and the press didn't really do a good job, all his baggage was sort of laid out for everyone to see. And it's almost impossible to look at that baggage and then take seriously, even before you crack the first page of the Obama book.
Yeah, O'Neill got most of the credit for that.
Yeah, he was the point person.
Sure, sure. Anything in the works?
Because of all that baggage, of course, he had.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Hey, do you have anything in the works right now?
Not right now, no.
I always ask that because I'm curious about when someone is a legitimate author.
Right.
I wonder if they're always writing or do they just sit down.
Well, actually, I'm writing a book on the campaign, so I write about that. It's really on the bloggers and the looking at the role of the liberal bloggers in the campaign. So I'm always working on that. I'm probably going to write on the convention as well for early next week and some of the media angles.
You're heading out there.
For the, I'm actually not.
Oh, okay.
Some of the media narratives that I find sort of amusing that are emerging between now and Monday.
Well, we're going to go and do our show from the convention, and I'm hoping to come at it from maybe from an angle that, you know, the networks don't try and.
That won't be too hard. It's pretty predictable.
That's right, Eric Bullard. Thanks so much from Media Matters for being on the program today. I enjoyed hearing your take on this gentleman, Jerome Corsi, and we hope to have you on again some of these days.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Eric Bullard from Media Matters. How many of you check in with Media Matters every day? They are a pain in the ass to the right wingers. You hear Limbaugh, you hear Hannity, you hear all of them giving it to Media Matters, because trying to defend themselves. Because you know, when it comes down to it, Media Matters doesn't even come at these issues from a political standpoint. They come at it about truth in the media. That's what they're about. And when someone writes just plain falsehoods, they're not afraid to put it out there. They very often put up a video of Limbaugh telling a fat out lie of a McCain or a Hannity, denying that they said something and then putting up, the video where they did. That's what Media Matters is all about, and it's a heck of a service. They've got a heck of a group there, and they haven't been around that long. I don't know how long Media Matters been around. What, maybe 5 years, 4 years? I don't know. But it's an invaluable service to everybody because they take apart just about everything everybody says every single day. And a Bill O'Reilly or a Hannity or a Limbaugh or one of those guys, they cannot get away with just coming across with pure bullshit without having Media Matters catch them. And that's what infuriates these guys. That's why these guys very often talk about the guys over at Media Matters. They pound on them on their shows and call them all sorts of names and stuff, but they can never deny. They can never deny what Media Matters says about them. They can't, because they don't put anything up on their site except the plain old truth that can be checked out, absolutely checked out, every jot and tittle of the whole thing. So, You talk about somebody that's a thorn in the side of the right wing. It is Media Matters, because they found their campaigns on lies and distortions, and they have a fear. That's how they've gotten themselves elected the last few times. I mean, you stop and think about this. This George Bush. It wasn't an accident this guy got into office. I mean, most everybody who knows politics, who knew the story about this guy, knew he was a buffoon. We knew that. We predicted that his administration would be a tragedy, which it has been. He likes to blame everything on 9/11. That's not the case. He's exacerbated one situation after another to make it into, quite simply, breezed past Herbert Hoover and Warren G. Harding as the worst presidents ever in the history of this country. Breezed past them. He's now in a class by himself. But these media people, they got this guy elected. They're trying to get a guy that, in my heart, I believe is actually worse than Junior Bush to be the president of the United States. So, and how do they do that? Of course, you cannot get somebody like a Junior Bush elected or a John McCain elected by telling the truth. It simply cannot be done. They recognize that. Lee Atwater recognized that way back when. And that's about the time when these horrible smear campaigns started by the Republicans. And Atwater got Bush Daddy elected and went, hey, this works. Demonizing the Democrat, the Michael Dukakis, linking him up with Willie Horton and all that. Why, this works. Hey, we're on to something here. Now, politics has never been a little kissy face game. Of course not. We can go back to the Andrew Jackson days and all that. And there've been plenty of dirty campaigns. But the Republicans have turned this into an art form. Almost to the point where you look at some of these people and you feel sorry for them. The Democratic candidates sometimes, they get overwhelmed. John Kerry, a case in point, the Swift voters. My God. Everybody knew, not everybody. But those with enough sense to see through that Swift boat book knew what it was. Knew it was a hit piece, a smear piece. They knew it wasn't true, and yet they got Junior into office again anyway. So that goes to show you they're masters at it, and we're facing it once again right now. Let's head over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Name the last Republican who did legitimately win an election.
Who did legitimately win one?
Yes. I would say Eisenhower.
Well, I don't know how you're defining legitimate.
Every Republican who's come into office since Eisenhower, Nixon on up, has won the election on the false pretenses.
Well,
or less than legitimate means. Nixon, he got to the presidency because RFK was shot.
Right. I completely agree.
Okay, that's the only reason why he won. Okay, his re-election occurred because I think it was Muskie. This is a bit before my time.
Oh, now watch it. Start talking about stuff.
I'm sorry. Okay, Carter, who is set to win the election, what happens? They pay off the Iranian government to keep him there.
Yeah. That's okay. Right. That's
Bush.
That's right.
Bush won, ran against Reagan in 1980, and Bush could not win the position as a dog catcher on his own. He had to ride on Reagan's coattails. Because, as you know, Reagan, I may not agree with him politically, but he was a rather charming man.
Oh, he's a great politician.
Yeah.
Great politician.
But Bush on his own would never be president if it was for Reagan.
That's very true. Very true.
Okay, it would be like Montgomery Burns becoming mayor of Springfield. If you notice him.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing. Or Bush, too. So they have to do the Swift voting stuff.
Well, I agree. And I think probably, well, of course, a lot of them wouldn't agree with you about Ronald Reagan. I would. I think the Iran-Contra affair and all that was significant. And You're right about when Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. Absolutely correct about that. And Richard Nixon would never have been there. Just imagine. I can't imagine how different this country might be right now. Sans a few events that you just spoke of. Hard to imagine. Oh, I don't know. And here we are with another guy who is absolutely not qualified to be president of the United States. He doesn't have the temperament. He frankly, and I know people hate it when I say this. Frankly, I think he's too old. I don't think he's young at heart for his age at all. I don't think he has shown any leadership at all that would justify him being the president of the United States. And I frankly was scared the other day when I said, did you see him give the speech about the Russians the other day?
Oh, yeah.
That reminded me of the middle of the Cold War days. It did. I thought, man, watch your mouth. You want to throw us headlong into another situation like that where you know, a lot of people think, oh, the Russians are harmless. They're not harmless.
Well, one thing I do know about the Russians, like Vladimir Putin, it's like when Bush talks about seeing his soul, yeah, I've seen his soul too. I looked in his eyes and saw his soul, and it's all black.
Yeah, his soul. Oh, boy. That was some statement, wasn't it? I wonder if he regrets saying that. Probably not.
No. And you know what? Maybe this may be the thing. Because, you know, I'd rather have, again, and I think I've said this before, it's better to have one or two, you know, megalomaniacs than just one.
Yeah.
Because they eventually kind of cancel out one another.
Right, right. Yeah, I tell you, it's a interesting situation it's funny to me now to see the Americans start throwing down threats like it. The Russians, like Condoleezza Rice, all of a sudden decided that, I don't know, she came out of hiding or wherever she was.
To get
involved in. You're the one that sent me the one about the shoes, aren't you?
Yeah.
Tell everybody what you said. Did I mention that on the air?
Well, no, you didn't.
Tell everybody the email you sent me when I mentioned the other day about how nobody could find Condoleezza Rice, and you said,
oh, it's a great time to go shoe shopping in Milan. It's true. Milan, this is the best time of the year if you want to buy your shoes at good prices.
You're a rascal. You really are. Kevin sent me that in an email, and I swore I was going to mention it, and I wasn't sure that I did or not, but that was the line of the day without question. Kevin, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, brother.
Yeah,
talk to you soon.
Bye. Yeah, yeah. Time of the year to be shoe shopping in Milan. She must have gotten away long enough to stop and talk to a few leaders overseas and try and make it at least look like the United States State Department would do something, anything. I got an email from somebody. This guy that says he's a Christian and he's a water boy for Christ. And I don't know how many of you saw that debacle, which is what I thought it was. I thought it was, hey, look, you know how I feel about these mega churches and these evangelists and these so-called holy people that the politicians go out and pander to. You know how I feel about that. And let me just restate, I think it's sickening. I think it's disgusting. Were I the emperor of the world, I've told people, I would decree that you could not talk about religion in a political campaign. It matters. And I know people disagree with me, and I respect their right to disagree with me over this. It matters to me. Not one whit. Nothing. I don't care. I just don't care, and I don't want to hear about it, and I highly resent seeing these guys going before this pastor, Rick Warren, at the Saddleback Church, another one of these mega churches in California, and have to sit there and pander to the audience, to the congregation. I think it's ludicrous that you would get sucked into that position. But anyway, I got this email, and let me just read it to you, because I think it's very profound. It says, it's to Pastor Rick Warren from the Saddleback Church. I think you're an awesome pastor and a great writer as well. I have a comment regarding your interview with Obama and McCain this past weekend on CNN. I'm a McCain supporter, and I'm also a pastor, a.k.a. the water boy. I'm not sure exactly what that means. I like your ministry and your books. What I didn't like was one comment in particular you made toward Obama. You mentioned it to him when asking a question to not give you his, quote, stump speech, end quote. Wow, that was very downgrading, especially to a Democratic candidate that agreed to come to your church and have you interview him in an environment of mostly right-wing conservatives. You did not tell McCain not to give you his stump speech, though some of his answers were very lengthy. If you did, I'm sorry that I missed that part. Obama handled it well and did not seem to let that comment throw him off, but it seemed that he felt a little befuddled by that remark. The letter goes on to say, I'm pro-life and voted for George Bush the last two elections. However, I don't classify myself as a Republican, but a Christian voter that judges each candidate by his character and not just on party lines. Obama giving you a chance to interview him was on his part a compliment to your ministry. That interview gave your ministry over 2 hours of national exposure that could go a long way toward the opening the door for other opportunities to witness for Jesus Christ. Since he was kind enough to agree to give you the opportunity to interview him, it would seem that you would not have made a comment such as the stump speech remark. I wonder, would McCain agree to have an interview with a black pastor in a mostly Democratic environment, go first, and be followed by Obama? That is probably the only way we and McCain would really see just how Obama may have felt this past Saturday. It took a lot of courage on Obama's part, for sure. I thought it was nice of Obama to put himself out there like that, and I think it will go a long way with many Americans who saw that interview. I thank you for your time and hope that you continue to do a great job in serving Christ. That was a letter to Pastor Rick Warren. Of course, we've seen excerpts from that all over the place. I don't know how many of you heard about it, but I wanted to speak to you today for a moment about an NPR broadcast story about Cindy McCain's business and charity work. And in the NPR broadcast, a story about Cindy McCain's business and charity work, in that broadcast off of NPR, Ted Robbins described McCain, Cindy McCain, as the only child of Jim Hensley, a wealthy Arizona businessman. The next morning, NPR received an email from Nicholas Pertalski of Phoenix, who heard the story with his mother. And to quote Mr. Pertalski, he said, "We were listening to the piece about Cindy McCain on NPR, All Things Considered, and it just struck us very hard," Pertalski said. His mother, Kathleen Hensley Pertalski, is also Hensley's daughter. The Pertalski family is accustomed to hearing Cindy McCain described as Hensley's only child. She's been described that way by news organizations from The New Yorker and The New York Times to Newsweek and ABC. McCain herself routinely uses the phrase only child, as she did on CNN last month. Quoting Cindy McCain, "I grew up with my dad," she said then. "I'm an only child. My father was a cowboy, and he really loved me very much, but I think he wanted a son occasionally." McCain's father was also a businessman, and twice a father. "I'm upset," Kathleen Pertalski says. "I'm angry. It makes me feel like a non-person, kind of." Who is Kathleen Hensley Pertalski? Documents show Kathleen Ann Hensley was born to Jim and Mary Jean Hensley on February 23, 1943. They'd been married for 6 years when Kathleen was born. Jim Hensley was a bombardier on a B-17 flying over Europe during World War II. He was injured and sent to a facility in West Virginia to recuperate. During that time, while still married to Mary Jean, Hensley met another woman, Marguerite Smith. Jim divorced Mary Jean and married Marguerite in 1945, and Cindy Lou Hensley was born 9 years later in 1954. She may have grown up as an only child, but so did her half-sister Kathleen, who was raised by a single parent. Bertalski said she did not see her father and half-sister. She did see her father and half-sister from time to time. I saw him a few times a year, she said. I saw him at Christmas and birthdays, and he provided money for school clothes, and he called occasionally. Jim Hensley, Cindy McCain's father, also provided credit cards and college tuition for his grandchildren, as well as $10,000 gifts to Kathleen and her husband, Stanley Pertalski. That lasted a decade, they say. By then, Jim Hensley had built Hensley & Company into one of the largest beer distributorships in the country. He was worth tens, if not hundreds, of millions of dollars. So when Hensley died in 2000, his will named not only Pertalski, but also a daughter of his wife Marguerite from her earlier marriage. So Cindy McCain may be the only product of Jim and Marguerite's marriage, but she is not the only child of either. She was, however, the sole inheritor of his considerable estate. Kathleen Pertalski was left $10,000, and her children were left nothing. It's a fact, Nicholas Pertalski says, his sister discovered the hard way. What she found in town on the day of or the day before or after the funeral was that the credit card didn't work anymore. The Pertalskis lived in a modest home in central Phoenix. Kathleen is retired, as is her husband, Nicholas Pertalski. He's a firefighter and emergency medical technician looking for work. They say it would have been nice if they were left some of the Hensley fortune. They also say they're Democrats, but Nicholas Pertalski said he had another reason for coming forward. The fact that we don't exist, he says, the fact that we've never been recognized, and then Cindy has to put such a fine point on it by saying that that's not true. Recently, again and again, it's just very hurtful. Kathleen Pertalski says she'd like an acknowledgement and an apology, and NPR asked the McCain campaign, specifically Cindy McCain, to comment or respond, and neither replied. Why would Cindy McCain say that she's an only child when she is not? Is she feeling guilty about inheriting the entire fortune herself? Who knows? I don't know the answer to that. Only she knows. Just thought that was a very interesting story because, like many others, I, too, have listened to Cindy McCain say she was an only child. I've listened to it over and over again. So I'm not sure exactly what the truth is right there. Why she does that, I think we just heard the truth from the Pertalskis. 866-546-5254. We're going to pause for a quick break. We'll be right back.
I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through
say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting.
Here with the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us today. We've had a good time on the show today. I particularly enjoyed talking to Eric Bollard, always a great guest. I guess we don't have any time to take any calls yet today. Mark Levine coming up next. Mark back from travel. Always good to listen to Mark. I listen to Mark all the time. So, good guy. Those of you that haven't met Mark, he's one of the nicer people you'll meet. He really is. And he knows everything about Washington, D.C. He's just like one of the real insiders there. You know what I mean? If Mark doesn't know it, nobody does. That's one of those deals. It's the truth. I owe Mark a dinner. Maybe we can fix that up out in Denver. I think I might be seeing him next week. And if we do, I'll have to pay him back for that dinner I owe him. I've enjoyed this program today. I always enjoy being with you. And glad that little storm's over that we had yesterday that we worried about around here. I want to leave you with a thought today about John McCain. Those of you that may be McCain voters or think that he's worthy of your vote, I'd like to ask the question, is John McCain honest? I'd like to ask you the question that do you believe John McCain and what he says? Has he shown himself to be honest or dishonest? And look at what he's done. Veteran support, almost zero. Environmental support, zero. Educational support, he hasn't been there. He's supported big business every chance he's gotten. He's promoted the war 100%. He's been right there on the war. Help for middle-income people, help for workers' right, doesn't exist. He was one of the Keating Five. Really took money for campaign contributions. That's what that boiled down to. He's made a lot of gaffes during this campaign that he said something and then swore he didn't. Been caught with having all kinds of people on his campaign that nobody should have. The question is, if you can't believe him now, how can you assume that his words have any more credibility than they did in his past? I don't think they do. And I don't think John McCain is a worthy candidate for the presidency of the United States. We'll talk.